to the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's one of the things that you discover over 2,000 years of being Catholic. Not that I've been Catholic 2,000 years, almost 11, working toward 2,000. But over 2,000 years, there have been time for so many of these different Catholic devotions and images and so forth to really develop. And one of the things about being Catholic is that the Catholic Church does not require any particular devotional practice. In other words, prayer is an important part of one's spiritual life, and reading scriptures and all those things are certainly very, very important. But in terms of one particular mode of prayer or one particular aid to meditation or so forth, the Catholic Church doesn't require it, but allows each person to find a means of nurturing their faith with obviously, hopefully, the direction of a spiritual guide or pastor, something that best nurtures themselves. And what you'll discover in the Catholic Church is, I think it was G.K. Chesterton said, the Catholic Church is so much bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. From the outside, people have this idea of restriction or constriction. But you get inside the church and you realize it opens up a new horizon of possibilities. And this is true in one's devotional life as well. The sheer volume, a veritable ocean of opportunities there are to reflect upon the faith. And everyone, as I said, is different. Everyone has a different focus. But one of those, particularly when it comes to the veneration of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, keep in mind, as we've said before, the veneration of Mary is qualitatively and infinitely below and different than the worship owed only to the three persons of the Trinity, only to God Himself, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. In fact, there's a Latin word, latria, that refers to the worship that's due to God alone and to the divine persons. What we offer to the saints is what we call veneration, honor. The Latin word there is dulia. Though the Blessed Virgin Mary, who had the singular opportunity as to participate as the mother of God, the one who actually bore in her own flesh God the Son in the incarnation, she receives what's called hyperdulia. That is a category of veneration that is above and more intense than any other saint receives. And we don't in any way venerate the saints with the idea that somehow they earned it through their own efforts, but rather the grace of God at work in them. They are not strictly necessary, and yet God, in His mercy and in His gratuitous kindness, has deemed to involve them in the work of our redemption. And so to honor them is to give thanks for the work of God in them and for their friendship and accompanying on our own journey of faith. And to know we've got people who've been down that road, they've seen the pitfalls and the turns, and they're standing with us in prayer is a great thing. And so the Blessed Mother has a plethora. Do you even know what a plethora is? Yes, a plethora of various devotions, images. Even there have been various apparitions over the course of history. And one of these is Our Lady of Perpetual Help, or also known as Our Lady of Perpetual Succor. As it says here in Wikipedia, it's a Roman Catholic title of the Blessed Virgin Mary as represented and celebrated in a 15th century Byzantine icon. If you've seen this image, and I love reading this reflection on the image and this description of the image, because you can glance at it quickly, but as with all icons of the church, which you're supposed to gaze through, by the way, to the deeper reality, nothing is ever accidental, and it takes time to reflect, to meditate on, to marinate in the image. And in this image of Our Mother of Perpetual Help, one of the things that I had noticed before, of course, was the loose sandal dangling from the boy Jesus' feet as he rests in the arms of his mother. And I've always understood that as a sign of Jesus fleeing in distress to the comfort of his mother, which, of course, all of us who consider ourselves Jesus' brothers and sisters are invited to do, because we have a spiritual mother entrusted to us on the cross by our Lord. But what I didn't notice until I was reading about this image is that Jesus' sandal is dangling from his feet while he's looking up at the two angels, Gabriel and the archangel Michael, holding the images and instruments of his crucifixion. And the story goes that our Lord had a dream as a young boy of his destiny and his passion, his crucifixion. And awaking, he fled to his mother so quickly that his sandal fell off to her embrace. I don't know what you're facing today. Run to the Blessed Virgin, ask for her prayers. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show. If you want to check out our full lineup on Breadbox Media, various personalities literally from coast to coast, go to breadboxmedia.com. You can see a variety of show topics, approaches, certainly different temperaments, all the rest. It's a part of the unity and diversity that is Breadbox Media. You can also find podcasts of your favorite programs. Maybe you've missed part of this one. You want to make it up. Go to Breadbox Media, look under the podcast tab, or you can also subscribe via iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean. So all kind of opportunities there. I've got a question of the day, by the way. Also, by the way, you can become a friend of this show. If you like what you hear, you want to support this show, then go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Become a Friend of the Show. You can become a friend of the show and get access to exclusive online content and know that you're doing your part to help keep this show on the air. Our question of the day goes regarding the Brexit vote in Great Britain. Brexit, shorthand for Britain's exit from the European Union. The European Union, which came together, we talked a good bit with Jason Hall on the program Friday, which was good because if you want to go back and listen to that second hour podcast from Friday, really a good one. Jason, who has forgotten more about politics than I'll ever know, giving us a good breakdown of what it means and this withdrawal from the European Union. And of course, it's caused some shockwaves in financial markets around the world. And still, we'll see how it all settles down. But my question is, do you think Great Britain made the right decision? Did they make the right decision in leaving the European Union? 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Now, the reaction to the Brexit vote has fallen out, I would say, along fairly predictable lines, at least here in the U.S., as I've been observing. Conservatives tend to love the vote. Liberals tend to hate the vote. And depending where you are on the political spectrum is how you're going to feel about it. It's yet another issue which is immediately polarizing. Choose up your camps and take up residence. And you can probably pretty reliably predict, for example, that the way one feels about the riots in Ferguson, Missouri will be reflected in the way they feel about Brexit. I mean, that's just kind of where we are right now. Immediately choose up camps on a whole number of issues. Each issue becomes its old inkblot or Rorschach test. I'm not sure that this Brexit vote doesn't have some complexities to it, though, that make it not quite so simple to do that. And that's what I want to talk to Father Alexander Lucy Smith at the bottom of the hour about. Because on the one hand, for example, you've got this idea of subsidiarity, which is a very Catholic principle that things tend to work better when they are governed from a local level. You also had, you know, maybe perhaps this false melding together of and homogenizing of the various cultures. That's Chuck, who's, by the way, a host here on Breadbox Media, on Setting the Record Straight, commented on my Facebook page. Of course, I opposed the EU. Starting 40 years ago was the worst thing that could happen to Europe, a homogenization of splendor into a blended mud. The EU's denial in their founding documents that the best of modern Europe was founded in Catholicism was enough to make me suspicious of their real intent. Yeah, I know that Pope St. John Paul II, when the European Union was writing its constitution, pleaded to at least make some sort of passing acknowledgement of the Christian foundations of the idea of Europe. And of course, they did not take that advice. As he says, he criticizes here, Chuck, the abandonment of morality and virulent anti-Catholicism that has led to a cultural and demographic suicide. So that, I mean, you do have on that, I think, that point of view, right? That Europe was, the modern European Union was really founded on a revisionist history idea. It was ultimately the Catholic Church that brought any sense of unity to Europe to begin with, and helped Europe really arise and prevail in many ways across the world as a civilization. To forget that, to have that sort of cultural historical amnesia, has crippled the EU from the very beginning. At the same time, though, we're not yet a century removed from the two bloodiest wars in the world's history. The Great War, or World War I, as it came to be known, and World War II, of course, which was brought about precisely because of deep fractures in European unity. Now, some have said you could trace that back even to the Protestant Reformation. Had that never occurred, and Europe was still united, at least, you know, under the auspices of the Holy Roman Emperor or whatever, you would not have had either World War. Of course, it's you never can know with history, but I do think the idea that Europe becomes a fractured reality again, when we know what the history brings, there's been bloodshed. Now, you may laugh at that, but it's a very volatile time in Europe. And I guess you could say the original Brexit was Henry VIII's decision to break away from the papacy in Rome. So we'll talk to Father Alexander Lucy Smith. I know he thinks it's a good thing. I know Tim Stanley, who I have a lot of respect for, thinks it's a good thing. So I'll ask him some of those questions a little bit later. But you're welcome to weigh in. 573-4BREAD-4 or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I did not stay up for it last night because I don't like soccer that much, as you know. But Chile and Argentina, living out my worst critique of international soccer, and that is ending their game and their overtime period with a 0-0 tie. Oh, man, I wish I had my friend David Kibler on here. Huge soccer fan who always teases about the lack of scoring. And I know the soccer purist will say, oh, but it's the beautiful game, the beautiful defense, the strategy. Yeah, but it's 0-0, man. And then they settle it with this shootout thing, which to me would be like playing the NBA Finals, going through overtime tied, and then settling it with a free throw shooting contest. But Chile prevailing, their second straight Copa America championship, beating Argentina yet again. And probably most bitter is that the consensus world's number one player, Lionel Messi of Argentina, misses on the penalty kick. I mean, because the penalty kick is all about guesswork largely, right? The goalie has to guess one way or another, and he's pretty much helpless. What he hopes is that he'll either guess right or that the penalty kicker will miss. And after the opening penalty kick from the Chile, Vidal, I think, missed, Messi had the perfect opportunity to put Argentina up in the penalty shootout, and he missed. Wow. So here's the guy who has been, who is now arguably the greatest soccer player in the world, But at a, on the world stage, international game, he has yet to bring home a championship, whether in the Copa America or whether in the World Cup. And he says now that he's done. He's done with international competition. So, you know, I don't know soccer, but I do know what it is to be a great player who is haunted by the monkey on the back of not being able to win a championship. So Lionel Messi, man, tough. And but look at it this way, Argentinians. Maybe, you know, spiritually, for humility, it'll be a good thing. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. The other thing I was going to note, I noted yesterday, baseball standings. You know, the Cubs who were a house of fire through much of the first 2 months of the season have come down to earth a good bit. I wouldn't say we're the thud, but still have the best record in baseball. But that unreal pace they were on, now no longer there. And now they've got two teams across Major League Baseball, the Texas Rangers, who are quietly having a phenomenal year, and the Giants nipping at their heels. So we'll keep an eye on that. Okay, let's get to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day, because we certainly have some people who have done what we have suggested, and that is go dumb or go home. First is Dunkin' Donuts manager drops tray of donuts on floor, puts them out for sale anyway. A former Dunkin' Donuts employee leaked a video this week that shows another employee dropping a tray of donuts on the floor, then calmly putting them back on the tray and putting the tray out for sale. The clip shows the mobile phone footage of the restaurant surveillance camera system, and it does fast forward through a significant chunk in the middle. However, Dunkin' Donuts did confirm the events in the video happened as shown, and the employee was reminded this is not a good idea. I guess you're trying to apply the 30-second rule to your place of employment, not necessarily the best idea. The second nominee that we've got is a motivational seminar with Tony Robbins, I guess. Something like a bunch of people tried to walk over hot coals, believing they could. A bunch of them reported with burns on the bottom of their feet. I believe I can. I believe I can. Stop! I no longer believe. Help my unbelief. We'll have to wait until through the next segment before I give you the winner, because we've got Father Alexander Lucy Smith coming up next from across the pond. This is the Mike Allen Show. Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, June 27th, feast day of Our Lady of Perpetual Help. O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee. Blessed to have live from phone from Great Britain, Father Alexander Lucy Smith, a Catholic priest, doctor of moral theology, and consulting editor of the Catholic Herald. He's been a guest on the program before, dealing now with the mass hysteria going on over across the pond on the Brexit vote. Good morning, Father Alexander.
Good morning, Mike. Nice to hear you.
Great to have you with us. Things settling down, or people still kind of in a very anxious mode right now?
Well, my internet just stopped working, and I'm rather glad about that, because I've been on Twitter and Facebook, and there have been some amazing reactions to the Brexit vote. Can I just say, my own reaction was pretty amazing. I went to bed on the Thursday night. We always vote on a Thursday in Britain. I went to bed on the Thursday night thinking Remain would win. Everybody thought Remain would win, and probably quite comfortably. Even though some of the leaders of the Brexit movement thought that Remain would win. I woke up at 4 a.m. by accident and decided to sneak a peek at my phone, and lo and behold, Brexit was winning. By 4:30 a.m., it was absolutely clear that Brexit was going to sweep it. And this created a huge shock in me personally. I mean, I had to get up and so on. I couldn't lie in bed anymore. And it's created a huge shock in the nation because nobody saw this coming, largely because all the party leaders, most of the parliamentarians, all the economic experts, all the people in the BBC, the bishops, all these people were firmly on the side of Remain. And suddenly, quietly, there was a peasants' revolt. And unlike most peasants' revolts, this one was completely successful. Most peasants' revolts end with all the peasants getting killed, but this time the peasants carried all before them. So it was astonishing. It is the most amazing political reversal in modern British history.
I guess the second bloodless revolution, is that what we'd say?
I would say so. It's a bloodless revolution. Now, of course, we had, of course, a glorious revolution back in 1688. But how glorious a revolution this is remains to be seen, because there's a huge amount of uncertainty. One of the things was that the referendum asked a question: should Britain leave or remain? Now, Britain has said very clearly, we want to leave. A whole load of people, of course, haven't quite taken that on board and said we must have a second referendum, or we must annul this referendum, or Parliament must pass a law saying this referendum should be discounted. That's not going to happen. Brexit is going to happen. But what Brexit actually means is not clear, because the question asked in the referendum only said, do you want to stay or do you want to go? It didn't say, what do you want to go into?
Right.
And there are many possibilities ahead of us in the context of Brexit, in the parameters of Brexit. There are a vast number of permutations. I mean, we could have a minimalist Brexit, or we could have a maximalist Brexit. The minimalist Brexit would be essentially sort of some sort of associate membership of the European Union. The maximalist Brexit, which nobody, I think, really wants, is a complete rupture with the European Union and a trade war, which absolutely nobody wants. In fact, although there's been a lot of shouting and stamping of feet and throwing toys out of the crib at this stage, I think what is actually happening is that wise councils will prevail. A lot of people have made a lot of very good speeches asking people to be calm. Our Chancellor spoke at 7 a.m. this morning talking about, you know, that there'll be an orderly transition. John Kerry, your Secretary of State, he spoke the other day in Rome talking about the necessity of an orderly transition. The Prime Minister, in his resignation speech, also spoke about the same thing. So there's no reason why there shouldn't be a smooth transition to some status outside the European Union. But of course, we've also had a few voices in Brussels where they're very shocked by this, saying that, you know, there can be no renegotiation, Britain must leave immediately, and so on and so forth. Now, that is predictable, but the real people who count in Europe, the German industrialists, the people who make BMWs, I don't know if they're as popular in the States as they are here, they don't want a trade war with Britain, because Britain is one of their biggest customers. And they have said, you know, talk of a trade war is ridiculous. We'll have a smooth transition. And I think that fills me with great hope that, you know, in the end, you know, money is king, isn't it? Sadly, for better, for worse. And nobody wants to get poor over this. They want to keep the trading relationship going. And I think that will happen.
We're talking with Father Alexander Lucy Smith, a Catholic priest, doctor of moral theology, and consulting editor of the Catholic Herald, talking about the Brexit vote in Great Britain over this past Thursday. One of the things that has been talked about with this, of course, is that, well, England's participation in the European Union has always been a little bit tentative anyway, right? Not embracing the euro, keeping the pound sterling system and so forth. Do you think there has been a great, I guess, obviously a rise in what some have called euroscepticism about the benefits of the EU and all the rest?
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the things that the government, when it called this referendum, didn't realize, that the European Union is heartily disliked by so many people in this country. I mean, it's a truism now. 52% voted to leave. And the 48%...
What don't they like, Father? What is it they don't like about the European Union?
They don't like... I think that there are two things they don't like. It boils down to two things. One is that the European Union is run by people who are unelected and who cannot be sacked by the British public. This goes back a long way to our famous politician who's now dead, Tony Benn, an extreme left winger. He was our equivalent of Bernie Sanders. And he said, you know, how can you sack them? You can't. Therefore, it's undemocratic. So that was the major thing. It's undemocratic. Also, the powers in Brussels had the power to overrule our own parliament, and therefore there was a loss of sovereignty. So that was a big issue. The other big issue was, of course, immigration. We have freedom of movement within Europe, and that means that anybody from the other countries of the European Union can come and live here. And it means that, of course, we cannot control who comes into our borders. We're not against, most of us, I speak for myself, against people coming in. But we do feel, perhaps, that we must be able to calibrate the numbers, and we must be able to pick and choose from who wants to come in. And therefore, that was also a very big issue. But for me, the main issue was, of course, sovereignty, this lack of responsiveness from Brussels. And finally, I'd say this. For the last 40 years, people have been talking about reform of the European Union, and they've been trying to get reform of the European Union. The last person to try that was the Prime Minister. And every person who's tried to get reform of the European Union has met with failure. So we've tried and tried and tried again to reform the European Union. And we failed. And so that's why I think in the end we're leaving the European Union.
Do you think there's a pretty strong unanimity among Catholics in their perspective on this in Great Britain, maybe among your colleagues, or are they as divided as the British people?
We're all divided, unfortunately. I mean, because, you know, that's the thing with referenda. They do tend to divide people. I don't think you have referenda in America, do you? But we have them very rarely in Britain. They're very common in countries like Italy. And a referendum tends to divide the country down the middle. There are devout Catholics who are in deep mourning over this. And there are, of course, people who don't believe in any religion at all who are in deep mourning over this. And there again, there are lots of people who voted to leave, who come from all faiths and none. I don't think the church had a decisive effect on this. It might have had once. Founding fathers, as we call them, of the European Union were all devout Catholics. But that devout Catholicism which once animated the European Union is now a distant memory. One of the things that nobody talked about during this Brexit campaign, but something I remember back in 2004, which is a lifetime away in political terms, the European Union refused to ratify the appointment of Professor Rocco Buttiglione as one of its commissioners. Now, he was a friend of John Paul II, the famous Italian philosopher and a leading Catholic in Italy. And they failed to ratify him because they objected very strongly to his beliefs, his Catholic beliefs about homosexuality. He said he thought homosexuality was a sin, but he didn't think that homosexuals should be subject to any political disadvantages. And because he said he thought it was a sin, the European Parliament refused to ratify him, and his candidacy had to be withdrawn. And Rocco Buttiglione spoke at that time of soft totalitarianism. In other words, the secular outlook of the European Union is a soft totalitarianism. It cannot tolerate anybody who doesn't agree with it. Also, about the same time, the European Union was coming up with its new constitution. And this new constitution, the preamble, John Paul II wanted to have in this preamble some reference to the continent of Europe's Christian roots. And the drafters of the constitution refused to have this there, it made no difference in practical terms, but it told you a great deal about the mindset of the European Union. So once upon a time, Catholics would have rallied to the European Union. I mean, once upon a time, I as a Catholic was fervently in favor of the European Union, but that enthusiasm has waned dramatically over the decades.
Father Alexander, we're getting close to the end of our segment here. Would you be willing to hold on for a few more minutes so we can talk a little bit more about this?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely. Good, because when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more, particularly what you were talking about there, and that is the Christian memory of Europe and how that has faded, and also maybe the original Brexit. Going back to the days of Henry VIII. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
We're back with Father Alexander Lucy Smith here on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, the 27th of June. Catholic priest, doctor of moral theology, consulting editor of the Catholic Herald, giving us a few more minutes of his time, gratefully. Father Alexander, of course, the Brexit vote, leaving Britain's decision to leave the European Union, makes us reflect on one of the reasons the European Union was formed to begin with, perhaps, was the memory, not that far removed, of two brutal intercontinental wars, of course, that it became international events, World War One and World War II. You know, are there concerns now? I know you said the Prime Minister Cameron, who's now a lame duck, had warned before this vote that a Brexit would mean potentially inter-European conflict, even a World War III. Do you think that's hysterical or legitimate?
Well, it's undoubtedly a historical fact that the European Union started with some coal and steel production pooling between Germany and France after the Second World War. The idea being, if the Germans and the French pooled their production of coal and steel, they wouldn't be able to make war on each other because coal and steel are necessary for making war. So it would make war impossible. But one of the things that has kept peace in Europe for the last since 1945 is, of course, NATO. And Britain is not leaving NATO and has no thought of leaving NATO. And it's often attributed to the EU that it's kept the peace in Europe. This is not the case. It was NATO that did that. And I think the Prime Minister's idea that if we left the European Union, war would be more likely was frankly quite silly. In fact, the European Union has brought conflict to Europe rather than peace. If you look at what's happening in Greece, which has been bankrupted by the policies of the European Union and bankrupted by having a common currency with Germany, Greece has had terrible internal conflict and street rioting and so on and so forth. Not a war, I know, but certainly not exactly what you'd call peace. So the idea of harmony promoted by the European Union is not as obvious as you would expect.
You know, one of the things that's been remarked, I've seen by some Catholics, okay, who opposed the Brexit, was that, you know, the original Brexit, of course, was Henry VIII's decision back in the 1500s. Some of whom say, well, if the British Reformation revolt had not happened back then Europe would still be united. I think Hilaire Belloc used to make that argument. It would still be united under the Catholic faith. Yeah. This, I would imagine, from your perspective, is sort of apples and oranges because of, as we already talked about, the lack of any Christian memory in the EU brought together for secular purposes rather than issues of the faith.
Yeah. Undoubtedly, some people have seen it that way. But the idea is that the Brexit movement is, in fact, doing what Henry VIII did. Now, of course, the thing is, though, that I've heard that actually from a former government minister, among other people. I would say this, that Henry VIII, in the famous Act in Restraint of Appeals, it started off with the phrase, "This England is an empire," which basically means that England makes its own laws and it doesn't have any higher legal authority, certainly no legal authority vested in any foreign powers. Now, of course, Henry VIII was asserting national independence, I suppose, but he already had national independence, so it was a bit of an empty claim. What he was doing was asserting his independence from the Pope, and that was a religious movement. This Brexit movement is, in fact, purely secular. It has no real religious element at all. Back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, we had a very colourful politician called, whom some of you may have heard of, called Dr. Ian Paisley in Northern Ireland, and he was constantly raiding against the European Union and constantly denouncing the founding treaty of the European Union, or the common market as it was called in those days, which was the Treaty of Rome. And he saw the European Union as some sort of Catholic plot. to which I would say, if only that had been true, you know, an international Catholic plot, yay, bring it on. But no, I don't think it ever was, sadly. And so I think Dr. Ian Paisley was wrong about that. And indeed, I also think the parallel with the Reformation doesn't work. If you want a historical parallel, you know the best one, and that is what you call the War of Independence and we call the Great Rebellion. When those guys chucked their tea into Boston Harbor and said no taxation without representation, that was essentially a let's bring home sovereignty movement. And don't forget, I have a bit of a stake in the Great Rebellion stroke, the War of Independence, because one of my ancestors was a South Carolina Tory, as I think you call it, but we call it a loyalist. And one of the arguments that they put about was, don't you realize if we break away from Great Britain, it'll damage our trade. And the American colonies will be reduced to poverty. Well, I don't know. It's some years since the American colonies broke away, and they're not doing too badly, are they? I mean, but that was, and of course, the other thing, the other great parallel is that people have said that David Cameron, he had some achievements to his name, like all prime ministers. He will be remembered as Lord North was remembered. And Lord North is remembered purely as the prime minister who lost the American colonies. All his other achievements can be forgotten. But I think that's what it is. That's why when President Obama told us we had to stay in the European Union, quite a few of us laughed, because he himself would never join the European Union, would he? Now, the other parallel is this. NAFTA is, as it says, a North American Free Trade Association. We Brits, we love free trade associations. We are a nation of free traders. But the European Union was much more than was a customs union, as well as a free trade association, but it was also a political union. We didn't want the political union. If it had stayed as a common market, we wouldn't have had this vote. Now, we had a vote in 1975, I think it was, saying, do you want to stay in the common market? And we voted to stay in. But you see, in those days, it was a common market. Now, it's a political union, which is a rather different thing. And of course, we were, unfortunately, not aware at the time of what we were voting for.
Let me ask you this question. There's been a lot of talk when you look at a map, for example, of how the vote broke down, of course.
Yes.
Scotland entirely blue with the Remain vote. Do you think there is a strong possibility that just as the Great Britain has broken away from the European Union, that Scotland will seek to break away from the United Kingdom and maybe even Northern Ireland as well?
That's what some people in Scotland undoubtedly would like. There's no doubt about that. I think, first of all, one has to be cautious here because the vote in Scotland, there was a considerable vote for leave in Scotland as well, which was smaller than the vote for Remain. Now, that's absolutely true. But at the same time, we've just had a referendum about Scottish secession, and the Remain, the Stay part of the United Kingdom, won it. It's true, this circumstance has changed, but I hope, as the negotiations for divorce from the European Union pan out, and as we have what I hope will be a minimalist Brexit with many advantages to this country, people will not see this Brexit as a huge disaster for Scotland, but they'll see it as a huge advantage for Scotland and for the rest of the country, and that this idea that Scotland has to leave the union with Britain because of Brexit, they'll see that as not such a great idea. I think it would be a great pity if Scotland were to storm out of the union over Brexit before we actually see what the actual effects of Brexit are going to be. Northern Ireland, it's slightly different because there were concerns about the border. Now, Northern Ireland will now have a border with an EU country. But I visited that border. When you say border, it isn't a border like the United States has with Mexico, with checks and fences and so on. It's much more like the border you have with Canada. It's a border you can just walk over without any checks at all. You don't even need a passport to cross that border. So again, I think that is a fear that will prove groundless as well.
We're here with Father Alexander Lucy Smith, who is a British Catholic priest, a moral theologian, and consulting editor of the Catholic Herald. Did Her Majesty show her hand on this in terms of what she was for?
Allegedly, according to one newspaper, she was for Brexit. And then, of course, that made a huge fuss because she's supposed to be politically neutral. And it would be very damaging for the monarchy if the monarchy was seen to be politically partisan. So the newspaper that made that claim had to withdraw its assertion that she was in favor of Brexit. But apparently, when people came to dinner at the palace, she would say to each guest, give me three good reasons why Britain should remain in the European Union. Now, if that's true, you can make of it what you will, but doesn't sound extremely fervent for European Union, does it? But nobody wants to drag the head of state into this. She is above politics, and that's a very good thing.
What about the, some people have tried to draw a parallel between the populism, the peasants' revolt, as you called it, that drove, I think your colleague Tim Stanley talked about throwing off the chains of the European Union, that sort of populism, and the populism that is driving the Trump phenomenon in the United States, and even the parallels between Boris Johnson, likely the future prime minister, and who was behind Brexit, and Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were quite a few people behind Brexit here. There was, of course, the highly intellectual Michael Gove and the highly intellectual Boris Johnson, it has to be said. He is a great intellect. I mean, he hides it very well, but he is a great intellect. He's written a book about classics and so on. And then, of course, there was Nigel Farage. If you want to look at Trump, Trump is much more like Nigel Farage than he is like Boris Johnson, despite the fact they've both got amazing hair, haven't they? But, Farage, we all know that Farage is never going to be prime minister. Farage is a populist and to some extent a rabble-rouser, but he's not a professional politician. One has the feeling that if Farage got into power, he wouldn't know what to do with it and it would all be a terrible disaster. Trump is a populist, but don't forget, Trump, Bernie Sanders is also something of a populist, isn't he?
Oh, yes,
in America,
true.
You have...
two
populist
types of
the left
Father, we're unfortunately out of time. I'm sorry. I got you started and then we ran out of time and we didn't even get to Armenia. That'll just be an excuse to have you on again sometime soon, okay?
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Father, it's
great
always a blessing.
You.
Blessings to
the
you.
The pleasure is mine. God right. bless you. Okay, then. Bye.
Thank you, Father. We'll be back with more here in just a minute. That's Father Alexander Lucy Smith. This is The Mike Allen Show.